The Internet, the final frontier.
Hello. This week on Boldly Going Nowhere, we discuss the Grammys, performances, awards, and Amanda and Kale's favorite and least favorite performances of the night. And Sean, Zach, and I will discuss 81's Star Wars Episode 4, A New Hope Revisited. I'm Colin Kakamas.
I'm Sean Holmes.
And I'm Amanda Cusinelli.
And you just got to the good part. Strap in and sit tight, because we're boldly going nowhere.
Yesterday was the 55th annual Grammy Awards that premiered Sunday, February 10th on CBS. The ratings were down this year by 27% from last year, but the 28.1 million tuning in was still made it the top rated program. I enjoyed the Grammys this year. I wasn't sure how it was going to go, but I'd have to say the last 3 years have been more enjoyable than not because of the format change. They've added more performances and less of the awards. I believe the amount of awards they actually gave out during the broadcast was about 10 or 11, whereas the performances were over 20. So even if there was a performance you didn't like, you only had to wait 5 minutes to see one that you probably did like. I'm going to go ahead and go over the awards first, the top four, you know, not any of the smaller awards, but we'll go ahead and do the four main ones: Record of the Year, Album of the Year, Song of the Year, and Best New Artist. For Record of the Year, the people who were nominated for that were the Black Keys, Kelly Clarkson, Fun, Frank Ocean, Taylor Swift, and Gotye. Gotye took it for Somebody That I Used to Know. I'm not sure how I feel about that one. I mean, good for him. I just have a feeling he's going to be a one-hit wonder type person. And to grab Record of the Year on a one-hit wonder, I don't know. I guess we'll see. I thought that Black Keys and or Fun probably deserved it a little bit more. But no big deal. Album of the Year. Black Keys, Fun, Frank Ocean, Jack White, and Mumford & Sons were up for that one. And Mumford & Sons took that for Babel. I own Babel, and I completely agree with this, because I own about four out of the five that were on that list. And I completely agree with all of those albums that Mumford & Sons should have taken that one. For Song of the Year, we had Fun, Ed Sheeran, Miguel, and Carly Rae Jepsen. Carly Rae Jepsen, to me, was just an absolute insult to the other people in the category, but Fun took that one away with We Are Young. Totally deserved it. Best New Artist, the people who were up for that were Fun, Alabama Shakes, Hunter Hayes, The Lumineers, and Frank Ocean. The only person on this list that I didn't know was Hunter Hayes, which I later found out he was a 20-year-old country singer, so... Fun took that one away for Best New Artist, which I totally agree with. I think that's great. But I think that the close second probably would have been Alabama Shakes. The Lumineers are another band that I'm not sure how long they will last, because they just sound a whole lot like Group Love, but we'll see. And that takes care of the top four wins for the night. The performances, there are, like I said, over 20, and I want to talk about a good majority of them, skip over a few. Some were memorable, some weren't. But the show opened up with Taylor Swift dressed in all-white ringmaster-type outfit, complete with top hat. She sang her song, We Are Never Getting Back Together. I was quite confused about this performance because she was dressed like a circus performer and sang a song about breaking up with somebody and never getting back together with them. Apparently, she was gesturing and making little remarks throughout the song that would suggest that she was talking to her ex-boyfriend who... I believe is part of a boy band. And, I mean, I just didn't really get it. It seemed like a Cirque du Soleil meets an Alice in Wonderland type thing, and it just didn't make any sense to me. But that's how they opened the show with her. And then you saw the host, LL Cool J. He appeared after that performance, and this was his second year hosting this award show, and I thought he did a much better job last year. This year I felt like he was sort of tooting his own horn a little too much, talking about how it was his second year and how many Grammys he had won. And I don't know, it seemed like it was the LL Cool J hour. The performance that was that came on after that was Elton John and Ed Sheeran, and they sang the song A-Team, which is actually Ed's song. Elton John was on piano, Ed on guitar. They were in center of the audience, and I found out that the song was about a drug-addicted prostitute. Another confusing performance for the Grammys, though. I mean, if you weren't really listening to the words of the song, you might not have picked up what it was about, but it was done in a lovely fashion nonetheless. The next performance I'm going to talk about is Fun. They sang Carry On, which I'm glad for that song choice because, quite honestly, I was tired of hearing We Are Young live. I mean, I feel like they've been doing that on all the talk shows that they've been on and whatnot. They got main stage, and behind them they had sort of a city light and city light orb thing going on above their heads, and mid-song, rain started pouring down on them. I guess everybody's first thought was, how are they going to deal with the equipment getting all wet? But I guess that wasn't really a thought in their head when they decided to get rained on at the Grammys. The performance was raw nonetheless, though I felt the lead singer, Jack, was probably off key a little bit. He didn't have the comfort of his auto-tune, which I think he actually uses a lot in recording. But Fun was fun. Miranda Lambert and Dierks Bentley were next, which there's nothing to really say about their performance, as well as Miguel and Wiz Khalifa. They sang the song Adorn. Well, Miguel sang the song Adorn, which is his song, and I felt that there was really no need for Wiz Khalifa to be there. It just seemed like an added-on sort of thing for his performance, which was weird. But I think the weirder part of it was that the song seemed to cut off abruptly, and in doing so, they announced the winner for country solo performance, which I thought was kind of funny for Wiz Khalifa to have anything to do with a country act or an announcement of a country act, but that's what happened. Mumford & Sons sang I Will Wait, which is their latest single, and they had main stage, and they were joined by a band with a horn section, so it was their band plus an additional band. They had a neat display with 18 light panel behind them with large marquee bulbs, and low front lighting. It was very dramatic and very appropriate, I thought. Anyone who's ever seen them perform is they're very dramatic in the way that they play their instruments and everything, and the lighting and everything went perfectly, at least I thought so. One of the most anticipated acts of the night was Justin Timberlake. He came out and he did his song Suit and Tie. Of course, he had a main stage. When you first saw him, the cameras were in black and white, and he had a band behind him with a horn section, which I believe were the Tennessee Kids, because there was quite a number of signs that said JT and the Tennessee Kids, so one can only assume. He also had three backup dancers in addition to that. I guess he was going for like a 50s theme, 40s, 50s theme, I guess is what he was aiming for. But I think the first thing that I noticed was that I had seen it before in a performance earlier in one of the previous years for the Grammys. So I was a little put off by that. But Jay-Z joined him about mid-song, and the camera stayed black and white, and he came on, and I'm not sure that he added too much to the performance because he came on and left just as quickly. But once he left, the cameras moved to the color, and he sang two brand new songs, or at least parts of two brand new songs. I mean, it was underwhelming for me for his big return. Maroon 5 and Alicia Keys did a mashup of Girl on Fire and Daylight, and I mean, there was nothing special about that. Alicia Keys came out and played the drums for a little bit, which was, I thought, was entertaining, but they just went back and forth between the two songs. Then Rihanna came out, and she performed Stay. She had main stage and a small band behind her, and a lot of pillars behind her, and at one point in the performance became a duet with Mickey Echo, a guy I've never heard of and have no idea who he is, but he came out and he sang with her, and I think that the performance was supposed to be emotional, but to me it came off more like cheesy and boring. I don't know what she was trying to do. She had already stirred up some controversy showing up with Chris Brown and sitting with him and all that, so I'm not sure what she was trying to accomplish with that one. The Black Keys performed with Dr. John and the Preservation Hall Jazz Band, and they sang Lonely Boy. It would have been cool if they'd have done a song that wasn't necessarily so played, but that is their latest single, so I'm not surprised that that's what they chose to do. They had main stage, and their background was a little distracting. They had this black and white zigzag pattern that was scrolling behind them a majority of the time. The jazz band added a lot to the performance, I thought, but Dr. John was confusing. He was dressed in feathers and colorful things, and he was off to the side, and I'm not really sure what he was doing there. I guess he was playing keyboard, but it was like a small keyboard. Not really sure what the instrument was. But there was no real mention of him, no solo, no anything. He just was kind of there, you know, very eccentrically there. Kelly Clarkson came out, and she did a tribute, which I thought was great because she did a tribute to Patti Page and Carole King by singing Tennessee Waltz and Natural Woman one after the other. She was in the middle of the audience for this, and I just thought it was very low-key and pretty and nice, and it was a good way to break up some of the harder performances. Now, there was an announcement that there would be a Bob Marley tribute done by Bruno Mars, Rihanna, Sting, Ziggy, and Damian Marley. It started off with Bruno Mars coming out and singing his song Locked Out of Heaven. While he was singing that, Sting came out with his guitar and sort of mashed it up with Walking on the Moon, which is a Police song. And after they were through doing that, Rihanna and Ziggy Marley showed up and started singing Could You Be Loved. So I guess that was the start of the Bob Marley tribute. Everybody at one point joined in, and then Damien came in and did a little rap interlude, and then everybody was just singing together. While in the background, they had Bob Marley pictures and, you know, Rasta-type colors surrounding them. The Lumineers sang Hey Ho, which is their only single, I believe, right now on the radio. It's a catchy song, but again, there was nothing flashy about that. I believe that they sang it exactly as they did on the as they do on the radio, so there was nothing special about that. Jack White was the next one to come out, and he sang Love Interruption and Freedom at 21. He had the main stage, and I thought his performance was interesting because he sang two songs. The first song he did was Love Interruption, and he did that with an all-female band and a female singer to aid him. I think the only thing I can complain about as far as this concerns, or this performance is concerned, is that I don't know who this female singer was. I thought she was great. I don't know who she is. I couldn't figure out who she was. I don't know if she was just a backup singer that he pulled to help him sort of duet the song. But she was wonderful, and I thought it was a great aid for him, and it was very soulful, very raw, and I thought the all-female band was just really cool for him to do. Once that song was over, he sort of moved to a second set on the same stage with an all-male band, which would played a little bit of a heavier song with Freedom at 21. He played a lot of his guitar. There was a solo involved. It was just another raw performance from Jack White, and there were lots of crazy lights, and it was just, it went from one contrast to the next, and I just thought it was done really well. Hunter Hayes sang his song Wanted. He was center of the audience as well on that stage, and I don't know what was going on with this kid. I had never heard of him before the Grammys. Country singer, he was on piano, and he had lyrics or something written on the piano. I don't know what it was, but it wasn't in very good English, and it was confusing, and I wasn't sure what it was. I can only assume it was lyrics. Carrie Underwood was the next to perform, and she sang her song Blown Away. Now, there was nothing special about this performance either. She was center stage with gold curtain behind her, and you could hear the music, but you couldn't see a band. And she wasn't moving, very, very stiff, and it was kind of weird for a while. And after about, I want to say 2 minutes, or at least it felt that long, the curtain moved, and there were light effects that were shined onto her dress, which explained why she wasn't moving, because she was obviously lined up for that. They were cool. I mean, I don't know what she was trying to accomplish, but it seemed all right. But nothing special, just different. There was a Levon Helm tribute that was done by Elton John, Zac Brown, Mumford & Sons, T-Bone Burnett, Mavis Staples, and Brittany Howard. For those of you who don't know who Levon Helm is, he was the drummer for the band. All of these people performed the song The Wait, which is a song by the band. They were on the main stage, and there were a lot of black and white images of, like, country images behind them, and as well as the images of people who had passed in the last year, because they had done, you know, the tribute to people who had passed right before they did this performance. I thought the standout person in this performance, honestly, was Brittany Howard. And she is from the band Alabama Shakes. I thought she did really well. She was the last person to actually have a part in that song, but I enjoyed her a lot, and I thought she was a great addition to it. Frank Ocean was the next performer, and he sang his song Forrest Gump. He was on the main stage, and he had a small screen that covered up his legs. I think he might have been playing keyboard or something, but I was really distracted and not really sure. On the small screen, his legs were running, but his body wasn't moving. And behind him, was a giant screen of people running towards him. And I guess I just didn't get it. I wasn't really sure what was going on, but I didn't enjoy the song. I didn't enjoy the display. I just didn't know what was going on. I swore if I had to hear the word Forrest Gump one more time, I was turning the channel. But eventually the performance ended and he did his fake walk down the stairs while the little screen showed him moving down. I was just happy it was over. And that almost wrapped up the Grammys. The very last thing that happened was the LL Cool J performance. He welcomed to the stage Chuck D, Tom Morello, Z-Trip, and Travis Barker to sing his song What Up. There were city scenes on the screen, and it was quite an energetic performance. I mean, how could it not be with Tom Morello and Travis Barker on the stage with you? But, I mean, it was pretty generic. It just had a lot of people. But the part that I really liked is at one point they had branched off and done an honor to the Beastie Boys, or more specifically Adam Yauch, with No Sleep Till Brooklyn. Now, I thought they were going to bust into the whole song, but they really only did the chorus part and moved back into the song What Up. As much as it was a mention, I mean, you got to be thankful for that, but it would have been cool to see them go longer. But this was how they actually closed out the Grammys. So, you know, you get your little fade out and you got your jib shot and you're out. And that was the end of the Grammys. So with all those performances, I wanted to pick my favorite and least favorite. At first, I would have said that Mumford & Sons and or Fun would have been my favorite pick. But after seeing the Jack White performance, I knew within the first 30 seconds that this would be my favorite performance. It was raw. It was energetic. I thought it was creative with the male-female band. The fact that he had sort of two sets to move from one to the other was really enjoyable. So I would say that that was my first favorite. My least favorite would have to be Forrest Gump and the Forrest Gump performance by Frank Ocean. I just didn't get it. I'm sure that somebody else did, because I know when I looked up some of the statistics, it was one of the favorite performances, but I personally didn't enjoy it. I didn't get it, and I didn't think it had mass appeal. I think that's going to do it for the Grammys, but I do, before we finish up today, want to talk about the Tuesday releases, which there weren't very many of at all, but the one that was most notable, at least the one that was most recognizable, is Bullet for My Valentine's putting out their fourth studio album called Temper Temper. It has a total of 11 tracks with approximately 44 minutes, and there's actually a deluxe edition available with three more songs, that totals an extra 10 minutes. So if you're a Bullet for My Valentine fan, you can go out and pick that up this Tuesday and enjoy that. I know a lot of people like that band. And if you don't want to go out and pick it up, you can actually go through our website, which is castwavestudios.com/Amazon. Help us out, you guys. The more that you purchase through our website from Amazon, the more money we get to keep doing this for you. So if you could, any of your shopping needs for Amazon, go through castwavestudios.com/Amazon. Give us some money, and we'll see you here next week. Thanks for listening.
You can hear Boldly Going Nowhere on Stitcher Smart Radio. Stitcher allows you to listen to your favorite shows directly from your iPhone, Android phone, BlackBerry, or Palm phones, on demand and on the go. Don't have Stitcher? Download it free today at stitcher.com or in the app stores. Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio.
All right, BGN at the Movies. Kind of a special occasion today, Sean.
Very special occasion, I would say. I think it's a long time coming for us nerds.
Yes. Now, to give most fans an idea, today Sean and I were actually going to start talking about the Oscar nominees, and we were going to sort of set up a road to the Oscars sort of thing, but we've decided to push that off till next week, and actually we're going to talk more about that probably at the end of the segment, but we actually found something very special. We actually have our good friend Zach Patterson from Severed Dongle to thank for that.
Oh, well, I appreciate the recognition.
Well, I mean, and for people who aren't aware, Zach is the former runner-up in our Stump a Star Wars Nerd challenge.
I was so close. So close.
Actually, Zach, if memory serves correctly, I think out of the five-week competition we had, Zach was champion for 4 of the 5 weeks, weren't you?
I don't want to toot my own horn, yeah.
And now, I was. And now he's a part of the studio.
Exactly. And now
I know a better prize than I could have ever hoped for.
Now he's one of us.
Yes.
I have been accepted into the cult.
Indeed. But to be honest, Zach, Sean, and I are probably the biggest Star Wars nerds out of Castwave Studios.
Oh, by far.
Yeah. So I think to go over what Zach has brought us, I'm going to go ahead and let Zach intro this.
All right. So I was YouTubing because that's what we do when we run out of porn.
Of course.
And I just happened to be looking out up.
But sometimes
some of us prefer
your hand just gets tired.
Some of us prefer story and taste.
Yeah.
Regardless, I wasn't talking about myself. Anyway, I was YouTubing and I would just happen to be perusing just Star Wars clips because that's what nerds do.
Yeah.
When they're too lazy to go to the TV and put in the disc and watch the movie. Yeah. And
we've all had those moments.
Mm-hmm. I pulled up a clip and it was the hit was Star Wars Revisited, and I was like, I have no idea what this is, so I click it. And it's the scene from A New Hope when Ben dies and the Millennium Falcon's fleeing the Death Star and it's pursued by TIE fighters. But when I saw the cut, it was obviously like nothing I've ever seen before. Like the graphics on the turret computers were amazing. The TIE fighters, the action, it was like I hadn't seen it before. So immediately I ran to Google and perused it, and I found the website. And there's a guy out there who goes by the handle IDYWAN, which is, I guess, ADYWAN. And the website is literally titled Star Wars Revisited with the secondary title, What the 1997 Special Edition Should Have Been. That's his handle. And essentially, he's re-edited the entire movie and made it logical and tasteful. And Han shoots first. Give the man a Nobel Peace Prize. He's essentially declared war on George Lucas and his hideous dictatorial ruining of our saga.
Mm-hmm.
And he's repaired it. Like, little things. Porkins, the laughingstock of Star Wars. A man so fat that he put his X-Wing into the dirt for no other reason than he probably had gas. This man said no.
I just like, a cutting room floor, you're like what are you doing on Porkins? That's
what happened to Porkins? He went in. Why? I don't know. That was Porkins for how long has it been? 35 years?
30, 40 years at this point.
Yeah. Poor Porkins. Where is he right now? He's probably on dialysis, but still.
Don't eat too much food and drive an X-Wing.
He got to be in Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Really?
Yeah, he was one of the FBI dudes who got Indy.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Top men.
Yeah.
That's the top men guy?
Top men.
Well, that just blew my mind. I know what I'm doing when I go home. Holy shit. Yep. But yeah, so ID1 goes unacceptable. So during his entire re-edit, and he even adds an extra 5 minutes to the whole Death Star scene.
Yes.
But while Porkins is covering Biggs, just a little subtlety, he adds one of the turrets manages to clip one of his wings. So that's why Porkins actually ends up having problems and puts it into the side of the thing.
Which makes way more sense.
And it makes him less of a loser because he went out protecting Biggs, who was taking out a radar tower.
Yeah.
I love that. It's just little things like that. And I think the more nerds that will find this, they'll be so happy. And he plans on doing this to all of them.
Yes.
And Zach, I guess, protruded a copy of this and brought it over here to here.
Oh, he just hands it out. He put an ISO file on his website and was like, here, take it. Put it on a disc, play it, show your friends.
So Zach makes a copy of this from the ISO file and then gives us the copy to Castwave Studios. We watched it, and we were all just stunned.
Like you haven't watched it before.
It's like watching it for the first time, and it's a lot of the things that George tried to add in 97 re-release that they tried with the prequels, where he tried to make it more towards kids, and it was like that wacky humor that didn't work, like in Mos Eisley, where the land speeder drives through the city, instead of running into one of those large Tauntaun.
It's called a Ronto.
Ronto?
If I remember correctly.
Ronto?
Ronto.
Where he drives through the Ronto, and the Ronto is like, whoa, oh wow.
And the little Jawas fall down.
Mos Eisley, villain and scum. Wow,
when actually it's like a Saturday morning cartoon land.
Yeah, it's a lot of the more wackier elements have been cut. In fact, instead of going through, you know, every single bit that was cut, because
we dare not ruin it.
Well, I don't want to ruin it for people, but I want to go around the table. Let's go with our favorite bits that just were a
favorite
adjusted.
Modification?
Yeah, favorite modification. So why don't we start with Sean?
I'm, you know, I've been waiting for this a long time, and I was disappointed when in the 97 re-release, when Greedo, you know, had some stormtrooper aim and fired first.
Disgusting.
It was outrageous. I'm like, that takes the entire thing away from Han Solo as a smuggler, as a criminal.
He's a motherfucking badass.
And yeah,
it literally subverts his entire character.
And I hope people from Disney are listening, or somebody.
God, I can only hope.
I can only hope that they better get their character right and read those Han Solo Chronicles on yes, they're books. You read them. Read
really?
Them and get his character right.
No, Disney burns them.
But this movie edited just perfect. And that scene where they added a certain, I guess, a textural effects to Greedo's face. Normally, it was just a puppet. And he, you know, it just looked like Han Solo was just like, what does a puppet want for me? And then you actually see the expressions coming from Greedo's face, and you're like, well, Greedo is obviously pissed. And there was it's a scene of tension until Han shoots first, and then he walks away.
Which actually,
and
now
that and then he leaves, and it was like a Western, you know, it's just that period of silence. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, oh, sorry
yeah,
about
adding,
the mess.
Adding emotion out to Greedo added depth to the scene.
And it was like watching it for the first time again. Mm-hmm. So that was my favorite scene.
I'm glad you mentioned that, because I remember when the Star Wars Blu-rays came out, a huge point of contention of why fans hated the Star Wars Blu-rays was because on Return of the Jedi, the fucking Ewoks blinked.
But it didn't change anything. They're just emotionless faces that now
exactly,
blink.
Exactly, but...
Which is creepy, by the way.
Exactly.
That's a blinking doll, which is fucking scary. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yes.
But the thing is, like, the blinking on the Ewoks didn't match, like, the type of blinking that they had was reptilian.
Yes.
If you put a reptilian blink on Greedo's face, it looks normal.
No, what I'm saying
you might as well have the Ewoks blink sideways.
Right, but here's what I'm saying. I'm glad you mentioned that. I'm glad you mentioned that, though, because what Lucasfilm did with the Ewoks in the Star Wars re-releases on Blu-ray was an example of CGI fucking up. Whereas what 81 did with Star Wars Revisited with Greedo is a way of CG being done correctly.
And adding emotion to the scene to envelop the characters is
yes.
what you want to do
precisely.
In, a, you know,
which
in the movie.
I'm actually kind of amped now, because if he does Return of the Jedi, I want to see if he fucking fixes it.
I have to show you a clip on YouTube. He's got some Empire preview stuff up, and he does the same effect that he does to Greedo. Mm-hmm. Yoda now enunciates when his mouth moves.
Oh my God!
He's still the puppet, but his mouth moves with the words that he's speaking instead of just going yep, 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 yep.
I will say this much: the one out there's a trailer in the ISO file. If you burn it on a DVD, I mean, and here's the crazy thing: it's not just, you know, like a simple DVD menu. It's like one of the Star Wars DVD menus.
Oh, that's wonderful.
It's crazy awesome. But one of the extra bonus features is it shows a trailer of. It shows a trailer of, what do you call it, Empire Strikes Back Revisited, yeah. Which, I mean, on his website, I think at this point he says he's basically done. He's got, like, one or two things he's got to clean up.
Oh, it'll be done by May, easy.
Yeah. So, you know, fingers crossed, I want to see that.
I'll say fingers crossed. I don't want to spoil it and be like, oh, well, way to go, Zach.
Okay, but the one thing I am excited about is the one thing I can remember from the 2004 re-release was when Vader calls Palpatine, and they removed Claude Revel's version of Emperor Palpatine. They put in Ian McDiarmid.
Yeah,
but they had that giant red fucking thing. It was so huge and it was so off-putting. I was like, why? Why would you do? I saw the one they put in for this one. I used blue. And he was much smaller. I was like, oh my God, yes.
It just looks, it's sensible.
Yes. I mean, because all the damn holograms, with the exception, like all the holograms of people were always blue. But the Emperor's like the only one that was in red for some reason. So he switched it to blue because it fit in with the rest of the goddamn movies.
Yeah.
I was like, thank you. Makes so much more sense.
What was your favorite A New Hope mod?
Okay, my favorite My favorite moment was, I'm actually not going to say a specific moment, but what I enjoyed the most about this was he cut a lot of the scenes better than, he basically cut the scenes so that everything flowed better this time around. Like, I can remember the conversation where Ben and Luke are having, they're talking about, you know, they see the message from Princess Leia, and then he talks about Luke's father, and, you know, he's like, you got to learn the ways of the Force if you're going to come with me to Alderaan, blah, blah, blah. He's like, I don't want to go to Alderaan. But, I mean, that whole conversation flows better now.
The way it was edited, yeah.
Yes. I mean, because the original way, I mean, it was fine, but this way you watch it and you're like, that makes way more sense this way. And then they re-edited the fight scene between Obi-Wan and Darth Vader, which, and they threw in music from Revenge of the Sith, which made it fucking awesome.
So it's not two old dudes crossing swords.
Exactly. But yeah. it was awesome. And I'm not going to say what to look for, but watch the Obi-Wan Darth Vader fight intently. You're going to see some cool shit.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, Zach, what about you?
All right, for me it's two things. I would love to discuss my favorites, but it's massive spoiler stuff, and I mean, it'll totally ruin it if you don't see it yourself and just be shocked and awed like Sean was. So here's what I'll say, and I've got two. One didn't make it into the movie, but it's important to be explained because it's on YouTube and it's a massive achievement. The first of which is the music selections. Like the Death Star and some of the Emperor, like the Empire moments, they added the theme from Empire Strikes Back that hadn't been written yet when it came out.
The boardroom?
Yes. And it flows better. And the Death Star, because of that, the Death Star has a much more sinister introduction with the original Empire theme. And then, like you said, the Obi-Wan Darth Vader fight, they recut in the music from Revenge of the Sith, that really nice dual suite that fits in, ironically, much better than it did in the movie from which it was made. But the kicker, and it's not in my copy. I'm told it's in later copies, but I think the one I found was old. I showed you guys on YouTube.
Yes.
Anybody out there, you ask anybody, there is no Star Wars character on the planet that is more hated than the duck-billed satanic monstrosity known as Jar Jar Binks.
Uh-huh. I can go with that.
It's just, you watch the movie, and it just makes you want to cry every time he opens his fucking mouth.
Misa have so much hate.
Please,
for
please
him.
Don't say Misa. Please. I beg you.
I'm sorry.
Otherwise, Misa jump across this table and slit your Misa throat.
God, it's not even funny. That's the thing. It's not even funny.
It is kind of, but.
I understand why
he was created, but it didn't work. Because there's kids younger than six that know Jar Jar and think he's stupid.
Yeah.
So, you know, ID1 obviously was like, I hope to God I'm pronouncing that right. But anyway, he gave us quite a gift to say. When I found it, I almost cried with glee. During the Alderaan explosion, he cuts to the planet. And he cuts to a really nice, I'm assuming it's the palace or whatever, wherever Parliament meets on Alderaan. And you watch as this explosion comes and consumes this building. And if you look outside, the two people standing on the patio that see it happen are Bail Organa and Jar Jar Binks. That, he killed that motherfucker. He put him on Alderaan, and the Death Star blew his ass up. So, I
will say, the second I saw that, I reposted it on Facebook with only one word and then 100 exclamation points after it. And what was that word? Vindication. Vindafuckingcation. Oh, yes.
The post heard around the internet.
Oh, I was so happy.
This is great because you just watch, and you have to assume, because you can't see his face, that he's got some idiotic look on his face as this explosion comes to swallow him into the satanic hellhole from which he sprung.
Yes. I remember you showing me that scene. I thought another thing that was cool about it was whenever you see it in any other version of Star Wars, you just see the beam hitting the planet exploding. And
it's instantaneous. There's no time delay. It's like this laser is just like...
In this particular scene that Zach is describing, you actually see what the beam starts doing to the planet. You see it hit the ocean, and the land just cracks.
The ocean
boils.
And
you see thousands of dust clouds being flung up at Jar Jar, and you're just like, oh, give it to him! Give it to him!
We can imagine
then,
that.
Bam!
That second was utter hell for that Gungan.
Yeah.
And it's so deserved.
Oh. Let's be honest. He was responsible for that fucking thing getting made. So, who better to get killed by?
Oh, no, it's wonderful.
All right. And I think we should wrap up this segment of BBG and the movies.
I would definitely
boldly
say,
going nowhere as well.
Yes, I would definitely say out of any any movie you watch in the next month or two, go to 81's website. Do you remember the website name?
I do. I believe it's, I don't know the exact URL, but if you Google Star Wars Revisited, it's the first hit.
There you go. Google Star Wars Revisited and get the ISO file. Watch it. Spread the word.
Pass it to friends and family. Every nerd who loves Star Wars must see this movie.
It's too good to be kept a secret.
They don't want it to. I've spoken with these people on their Facebook page. You can find them there too. The same search, and they've said that all they want is for it to be spread. They want it to be popular. They want the nerds to get what they want.
I was gonna say, because this honestly, this is the best fan edit I've seen.
Of
any movie, and especially of Star Wars. And honestly, I they're not lying when they say that. This is what the 1997 special edition release into theaters. This is what it should have been,
bar none.
Yeah. So
I can't wait until
Empire. And God forbid Return of the Jedi, because if you thought some of the action with the spaceships was epic, he's got 6 points for Return of the Jedi for mods he wants to make, and the third point on his list for Return of the Jedi is make the space battle even more epic than it already is. That should get us away from those furry little monsters.
Yeah.
I mean, because that's the thing. The battle itself was already awesome.
Yeah, so what's he going to do?
Right, because I think the biggest point of contention we've ever had between you and Isaac was that you always felt that Return of the Jedi was the superior film, and I've always felt Empire was. Now, we're not going to get into the argument.
No, I want this on tape.
Yes.
Empire is better.
Well,
Return of the Jedi is just my favorite. I've watched them. I've watched them over and over and over again. Clearly, the quality lies with Empire.
Okay, but
I can make peace with that.
Okay, that's fine. But here's one point of contention I will give you. Return of the Jedi has the best dogfighting sequence of any of the three films.
Bar none.
Yeah, I agree.
I mean, the Millennium Falcon through the asteroid field is awesome.
It's great.
It's great.
In terms of story,
but
Empire takes the cake for that.
Right, right.
That's not being debated, that's just common knowledge.
Yes, but what I'm saying is, because this is the one point I think I went to contention with you on. I was like, okay, I'll give you this. Return of the Jedi, better dogfighting than any of the other movies.
Yeah.
I think
that's where my bias came from, because I just watched that scene over and over and over again.
Until we go on another hour, I think we should wrap up things.
Yes, so...
plugs all around.
Yes, definitely check out 81's website. If you want to follow us on Twitter, Sean, you can be found at where?
Sean L. Holmes.
I can be found at Colin 20-something.
And I go by Z. Patterstein, that's P-A-T-T-E-R. STEIN _SW for Star Wars, go figure.
Yep. Also, you can find us if you go to Facebook. You can find us at Boldly Going Nowhere.
And Boldly Going Nowhere is facebook.com/BGN podcast. And go to, if you want to support this studio and support nerds like us who are trying to get the word out about nerdy things and nerdy culture, go to castwavestudios.com/Amazon, where you can learn to keep the lights on just by shopping your daily shoppers without any extra cost to you. So that's castwavestudios.com/Amazon.
Yeah.
Click now, click today, shop now.
Help us
today.
Find some monies.
All right. This is enough to do it for me and for Colin Kakamas.
This will do it for Boldly Going Nowhere. So sayonara and see you next week.
Outro.
Outro.
Boldly Going Nowhere is a Castwave Studios production. For other shows and more, visit castwavestudios.com. Wow, that sounded great.